I put together a few things that we're working on. Also, something that I'm working on here, which I hope to finish by the end of this week. But you'll see the general ideas where we're going to, and the general idea is the overall notion of a holographic Fermi liquid. And I'm going to give you a short overview of many people's contributions in this room and show how it's all pointing, hopefully, in one direction and where that direction is. So the background is, of course, that we want to apply ABS CFT to strongly coupled problems. And the other very well-known application to relativistic heavy ion physics, there's a very natural connection, because the canonical example of ABS CFT is that of a gauge theory, a Yang-Mills theory, and heavy ion physics presumably, right, is controlled by quantum chromodynamics, which is a Yang-Mills theory. But in condensed matter physics, we don't really have this intimate connection with gauge theories. So you have to make sure that you understand the system through some other means that you can hope to apply these strongly coupled phenomena. And if you apply this to a system of fermions, these systems almost always, or basically always, have in some regime of their parameter space a Fermi liquid ground state, because this is the generic ground state of such system, of such systems. In the same way that the generic ground state of a Bose system is a symmetry broken state. So in the phase diagram of high TC superconductors and heavy fermions, there's always, right next to the quantum critical region that you try to describe with ABS, right, there is a Fermi liquid phase. So we're going to try and see if we can get this out of ABS CFT, and it's sort of essential really to do this, to make contact with, if we want to make contact with real experiment. So just to remind everybody, for those of you who know it well, this is going to sound very familiar, that for the for Fermi liquid, the primary way to test this, or the primary characteristic, is encoded in the single particle spectral function, which is the imaginary part of the target Greaves function. And it should behave as follows. There is a characteristic pole at a specific momentum kf. And generically, this object has some width. And then for a regular Fermi liquid, lambda Fermi liquid in this textbook, this width goes as omega squared. And this implies many of the other observable features of a Fermi liquid, linear specific heat, etc., etc. And the other primary object, right, is the Luttinger count, or Luttinger's theorem, that when you have such a system, the total charge density in the system in two dimensions is pi kf squared. And this actually is a non-perturbative statement that doesn't depend on the interactions that these fermions experience. So this is a very robust tool to understand your system. Okay? So to get such a Fermi liquid, you need fermions, and you need to put them, you need a bunch of them, so you need to put in a chemical potential in the system. So the most straightforward system, so you need fermions, and you need some non-zero chemical potential. So the obvious dual is, obvious first try is ABS Reisner-Nordström black hole. This is a charged black hole in ABS. The charge of the black hole encodes the chemical potential in the gauge theory. And then we can try to describe it. So I'm going rather fast because I'm assuming that many of you have seen this before. And when you do this, you find, famously, that the width of this object is controlled by some parameter nu kf. And this nu kf is, schematically speaking, looks as follows. It's k squared plus the mass of the fermion in ABS minus the charge of the fermion. And from this, we notice three things. One is for some specific, for very, very low momenta, as long as q is larger than m, let's take this limit, right? This object is imaginary, and this corresponds to a long oscillatory region in the spectrum function. If k is larger than this critical value, then there still are different characteristics depending on whether this power nu kf is less than 1/2, equal to 1/2, or larger than 1/2. And that is because as you approach the pole, right, if it's less than 1/2, this actually is the dominant power of omega as you approach the pole at omega 0, rather than the other guys. Okay? So these are the famous non-Fermi liquids. This is the marginal Fermi liquid. And these are regular Fermi liquids, although except, right, only if nu is exactly 1, do you have the Landau Fermi liquid that we mentioned right here. Okay? So I'm going to graph this pictorially, that in these ADS Weissner-Nordstrom cases, you have an omega.
Just remind me, in the case of
nu
equals 1, is the
repository
part of this stable?
For all nu is larger than 1/2, they are stable. Okay? These are need unstable, this is marginal stable, and this is. So all these quasi particles have a pole. The pole at exactly omega is 0. So for some region up to KO, there's this oscillatory region. And then there are a finite number of discrete poles with various powers of nu. OK? These are. And of course, this is the actual location of the poles. And if you would draw this as a spectral function, you would see some widths approaching here. And the size, this width is controlled by the value of nu. So the fact that nu is not exactly 1 is different from the regular Fermi liquid. And the other thing is that you don't have generically one of these Fermi surfaces, that you actually have quite a few of them. And that depends on this charge q, which is an external parameter that you put in. So you can make a second graph where you have k and this parameter q and 0. So sort of roughly speaking, if the mass is 0, that's an external parameter, for q less than k, nothing happens. And then the values of kf for various peaks depends on q. So this is what the situation in the ADS Weissner-Nordstrom case. And the important thing is, or this was, of course, the first successes of AES-CFT applied to fermionic systems. But one thing it also tells you is that you have to go further. First of all, there are these unstable modes generic in the system. But even more importantly, as was pointed out by John and Tom and collaborators, this long oscillatory region precisely corresponds to the threshold of pair production in AES-CFT of these charged fermionic particles. So generically, actually, you expect the system to be unstable. There are many other ways you can see it. AES Rice and Nordstrom has a finite ground state entropy. So all these things together means that the reaction, which so far has been ignored, of these fermions is actually important. And it's the usual story, that is the story also of the holographic superconductor, is that if you have a charged black hole in AES, this is the AES boundary, this is the black hole, then because AES acts as a potential well in the system, it can, in principle, support some charged sphere or charged cloud of stuff over, hovering over the black hole. And this would actually be the preferred configuration of what's going on. So the real problem, or the real issue now, is to actually go beyond this first story and go towards next story and see whether there we can end up in the regular Fermi-liquid ground state. So the point is that this actually is not so easy. Because the problem is that if you apply this to fermions, this means you have some finite density of fermion, charged Fermi particles in the bulk. And in some ways, you're back to the old problem that you're trying to address in the first place. You have a many-body Fermi system, but now in the bulk. And this is notoriously non-local due to the Pauli principle. The moment I add one fermion in the system, all the other fermions will try to rearrange themselves in the system. Of course, there are many ways people know how to try this, how to approximate, how to deal with this in some approximation. So the trick is to figure out what are the nice approximations to the system. And there's one question in particular that seems rather crucial. Is you may want to focus on a local approximation. And one reason, or an important reason, is that it should also be local in the radial direction. The radial direction encodes the RG flow of this system. And the first approximation to deal with non-local RG flows seems very, very strange in this system. So you might want to think that the local approximation is the one that gets you closest to what you have to do. Okay? So we're not there yet. So when you think one step further, there is another issue, is you want to have sort of a Fermi system in the bulk. And we know how to do this, of course. In principle, we need to occupy all normalizable, or a number of normalizable wave functions. For Bose system, there is no issue here. if you look at the holographic superconductor, because if you have occupy one wave function, generically, right, it's energetically favorable just to put more and more states in the same wave function, and you can build a coherent macroscopic state of the same system. All right, so the normalizable solutions, these precisely correspond, and the problem arises that I wanted to address is that these normalizable solutions precisely correspond to poles in the spectral function. Okay, but if you would do this for a fermion, you know that once you occupy the first normalizable solution, this one is filled. The Pauli principle forbids you from filling the rest. Okay, so it tells you that once you have occupied the solution belonging to one pole in the spectral function, you should then occupy the next pole in the spectral function. But now comes the problem, is that each pole in the spectral function, as we've seen, corresponds to a separate Fermi surface. So the question arises is, what should, the question arises, how does this work? And I can make this question more concrete. And the point is that you can prove that once for a normalizable fermionic wave function, so if I have a fermion in ADS, I usually have to decompose it into eigenstates of gamma z. They are the leading fall-offs at infinity. Okay, this corresponds to a non-normalizable mode. This corresponds to a normalizable mode. The Green's function is usually d over a. Okay, but what you can now do is using this dictionary. You can prove that the pole strength z is precisely equal to d of a normalizable mode d dash d. Recall a of a normalizable mode by definition is zero. How do you normalize the wave function? So this is an interacting Fermi system, right? So the only thing, you can't really normalize the whole. Yeah. So there is an overall normalization in the system that you can't fix in this proof. Okay. The only thing you can show that if it's non-zero, then z is non-zero. But in a general and this is just wave function or normalization, right? In a free Fermi system, z is equal to one. If you now turn on interactions, you can follow the flow, and in the infrared, you have an induced pole strength.
You should be able to fix it, though, really, for a pair of different values of k. You complain that Z has to do something.
Okay, so I can tell you a way. I can tell you a way to fix it, and I can tell you a way to fix it, and I can immediately tell you why this also is a problem. You can fix it by requiring that the overall spectral density is normalized to unity. Okay. And however, in these theories where you have, if you have a large enough conformal dimension, sorry to go technical, a large enough conformal dimension for the fermionic field, and at large omega, it blows up.
It depends what you're calculating, right? So, like, I guess that divergence, I don't know that really plays an important role. You know, like, for example, if you compute the charge from these fermions, that's finite. So maybe you could use that to normalize it.
So you can subtract off the short distance behavior in the CFT, right? That's your chemical potential.
Yeah. So once you but that's the whole point. You have to regularize it at some point. And once you regularize it, then you can fix the normalization unambiguously. That's all I was trying to say.
Like, how do you regularize it actually? So
such a way that you're guaranteed to get something positive and so on and so forth.
I don't know if you're guaranteed to get something positive.
If you can't just subtract it off, that's probably a bit. Wait, no?
You have to be somewhat more careful. Yeah.
Do you know? So this has come up before, and I'm just curious. So the statement is that because these fermions are finite dimensions, their two-point functions can grow at infinity, and then you'd like to define the fermion number by integrating the spectral weight. And I'm just curious.
So if you try to compute the charge carried by these fermions, then you need to worry about the UV a little bit, but there seems to be a way to do it where you get the answer you want, which is the Fermi surface volume.
And then it is known to somebody?
We were working on this now, yes, it is. But it's a UV thing, it's, you know, it's...
Yeah.
It can be subtracted off.
I believe so, yeah, I think so.
Deep down, it's just a regularization and a normalization issue. But how to do it in practice, I actually don't really know.
It would be nice to...
Yeah. But I don't think that's really related to this, really, because I guess I'm confused. What is the definition of Z that you're using? Like, how did you...
Z is just the pull,
the strength of the pull and the Gray's function. Yeah. Okay.
It's a weight, right? So if you just integrate spectral density at Z, it'll be like a random integrating analysis.
If you just integrate Z?
Integrate the spectral density over frequencies near... Yeah.
Maybe
the weight of the delta function doesn't really work at all.
It will be the weight of the delta function.
So I mean, it is closer to the delta function.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, we can talk.
But there's some spectral weight that isn't in the delta function, even after you...
Everything's in delta function. But if you're, it depends what you're calculating, I guess, because I'm just calculating the charge density, say. So, you know, that doesn't really care about the strength of the pole so much, it just cares about the volume taken up in K space. So I think the thing I'm calculating is not a good diagnostic for this guy.
If you're worried about just multiplying this by chi, so that it doesn't, like, the Green's function clearly doesn't care about the overall normalization, okay? So if you want to do this precise, there's here, below here, there's another factor, which I haven't written down, okay? But it's always non-zero, but it precisely compensates for an overall normalization of chi. And I can look it up for you in our notes. So this is the actual Z is proportional to the norm D, but it doesn't depend on however you normalize your fields in ADS. It cannot, right? I mean, otherwise I could blow it up arbitrarily to something. Okay. It's just to show that if this is non-zero, Z is non-zero. That's all. Okay. So what this boils down to is the question, since every single normalizable mode corresponds to some occupying some first term.
Your pattern is at the point where A is 0, right?
Yeah.
So if D was also 0, there'd just be no fermion. I mean, sorry.
Yeah, so if you are in a system where you cannot find a normalizable mode, right, then there is no finite fermion density in this system.
A little bit away from
Okay, so the question is, does it make sense from the CFT angle, right, to occupy many of these things? You want one single Fermi surface. On the other hand, from the gravity side, right, you have the opposite problem. You generically want, the generic state, which should be some Fermi gas hovering over outside of the black hole. So from the gravity side, you would expect actually to have many fermions. So what is the resolution to this? Well, I'm not immediately going to give it to you, but we're going to keep this as an open question. Let me just write it down so that we don't forget about it. Does it make sense from the CFT to populate n larger than 1 wave functions? ADS wave functions. And simultaneously, does it make sense from the ADS perspective to populate n equals to 1 ADS wave functions?
Just to check here, by wave function, I mean there's the one on the top of the Fermi C and all the ones underneath it as well.
Yep.
By one, you mean one Fermi C's worth, right? You don't just mean one node.
You are going ahead of me.
I just want to understand what you mean there.
Yeah, so just I really want to mean here an exactly normalizable wave function. So solutions to the system where A is exactly 0. That is the exact mathematical statement. And keep in mind, because with your question will quickly come back, especially when we start discussing how this is related to Subir's recent work.
Is the number of nodes in the solution?
Excuse me?
What is n number of nodes?
N is simply the number of wave functions I occupy. I'm assuming that I have some discrete set of wave functions that I can count them.
And why is a problem from CFT side?
Because each wave function corresponds to a Fermi surface, right? And so if I have this different Fermi surface with different characteristics, so I would not get a regular Fermi liquid out. I would get some complicated system with multiple species of fermions, each with a different characteristic. So it's not fundamentally a problem. It's just if I want to get towards the, it's not. It doesn't appear to be the generic ground state from condensed matter point of view. Okay, so it's that would be curious. Yes.
So right question. So in the usual sense, the CFT is a strongly coupled, or the W is a strongly coupled, and Fermi liquid is a weak coupling notion. How are you getting a Fermi liquid in a Fermi?
So that's a good question. Let me briefly address it. So the Fermi liquid is an emergent state at long distances from whatever state you started with. Okay. And what ADS CFT could in principle apply if that underlying microscopic state is strongly coupled. Then you should be able to see an emergent weakly coupled state in ADS CFT.
I think the statement is if the weakly coupled degrees of freedom are just a few compared to n squared, then you can get a few moles that we can interact, but you need to have a big bar. If the IR is weakly coupled, it's going to become singular in the bulk. And so the way it works is that you have n squared gluons that are still floating around, and then you put one fermion in. And that one fermion can be weakly interacting, and it's just one. It's just, as you're going to say, it's just one mode.
Yeah.
Weakly interacting with sub or with this?
It's a pulse. You can have one quasi particle or two quasi particles in your Green's function, and that's fine. But it's not. If everything is weakly interacting quasi particles, then your geometry will become single.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong. It's like Goldstone modes. You can have one pole.
Yep.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. That's completely correct. Just a quote. Yes. Okay, so these are the two issues that we have to address. This one is that we have to make some approximation, and a local approximation is natural, and at the same time we want to see what happens to these two questions. So, there are two obvious local approximations. One is that you simply take, based partly on those considerations there, a single fermion. I'll discuss this later. And the other one is that actually they take many fermions. In fact, you take so many that you can make a fluid local approximation to the system, right? So, fluid approximation. Okay? So this is, the second is of course famous, and this is due to Sean, Eva, David, and Joe, is that this is just a Thomas Fermi approximation to a finite density Fermi system. Fermions coupled to gravity. This Thomas Fermi approximation says that if I want to compute the density, which is normally the sum over states, and then I can now replace this by an integral dE etc. And this Thomas Fermi approximation to finite density fermions coupled to gravity is also known as a neutron, or in this case, we're going to do charged fermions, an electron star. So, at the risk of telling you everything that you already know, let me briefly review the electron star, and then I'm going to go to the spectral functions in this object. So when you solve the equation of motion, you find that the energy density, pressure, and the charge density of the system as a function of the radius behave roughly like this. There's famously, there's an edge of the star. The second thing that you find is that in the infrared, in the interior of ADS, there are some Lipschitz scaling. So, S squared behaves as top of my head, was it? Minus do I have this right? With the only thing is that Z is a non-universal exponent. Z is a non-universal exponent which depends on the charge and the mass of the original fermion that you started with. Okay? So in particular, this Lipschitz geometry means that the specific heat in this system goes as not linearly, but this depends on this parameter z. So let's look a little bit more in detail to this electron star by using these spectral functions to probe the system. Now, the first thing is that the electron star the action, which is just Einstein, Maxwell, Dirac, depends on three parameters. There's the mass of the fermion, there's the gravitational coupling constant in units of the ADS radius, and there's the charge of this fermion. But when you make this fluid approximation, in essence, that says that you replace the sum over the number of states by an integral. That means you make incrementally the spacing between the states to zero. So this corresponds to taking this parameter Q, which is the charge of the fermion, much, much less than 1. So there's one aspect that you should now do, is that there's a convenient rescaling of these parameters in terms of some object beta, which is Q effective kappa squared over lambda squared, m hat, which is Q effective times m. And Q effective is Q times kappa over lambda.
Could you tell us how you know the lambda action?
I can, yeah, let me, I expected this question, so let me write it down. So in terms of these variables, the action looks as follows. So the main point of this is that the L squared over kappa squared comes out front completely. And then the price you pay is that here you have a Q. That becomes then the effective charge of the fermion in this sort of overall rescaled action. OK? And then, so in terms of these natural parameters in which you write the action, this fluid approximation is just Q effective. It's much, much less than lambda over kappa. Let's see if I'm writing this down correctly. Yep. And this is very natural because you see that lambda over kappa in this rescaled action plays the role of 1 over h bar. OK? And the normal way you understand the Thomas Fermi approximation is precisely a limit where h bar, which controls the spacing, goes to 0. Okay. So what this means is that in the limit of this object going to 0, the background will therefore not depend on this object. But once I start to compute spectral functions, it will depend on what the value of this object is. So the spectral function tells you a little bit more about this electron star background than you thought you knew. It actually tells you how good the fluid approximation that you made was.
Shouldn't this approximation break down also if the chemical potential is too small?
The
chemical potential is too small?
If the chemical potential is too small.
You just don't have enough volumes.
Yeah, so in this case, you're using the canonical ensemble, not the grand canonical, right? So it's just if you can express this in another way. It's really if the ratio of the microscopic charge to the total charge of the star, right? If this is small, then this works very well. If this gets to be of order unity, then this picture breaks down.
Are there two independent conditions?
No.
Can I have a premise that don't carry this charge, that approximation is true? Which is not very many.
Yeah, but then the fluid approximation never
works. That's what I'm saying.
Never works.
It's a necessary condition for fluid approximation.
Yeah.
Isn't that true?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah, I mean, these very intuitive statements you can actually literally derive simply from the condition that if you want that the effective chemical potential, right, which is basically the value of the local electrostatic potential in the bulk, if this is much, much less than mu squared, right, sort of the standard adiabatic approximation, and it's all equivalent to these statements. So if you want that the local chemical potential doesn't change too much in ADS, which means you can ignore sort of, you can make this approximation that you can locally treat this as a Fermi gas at fixed chemical potential. That's all equivalent to this thing. Okay? So, the point being that the spectral functions do depend on this value of Q effective. And when you compute them, you find a number of things. But before I compute them, you can already expect some one thing. Just remember that in this fluid approximation, you populate many, many, many fermionic modes. So based on this earlier insight, you expect that you find many, many Fermi surfaces. And indeed, you find many, many Fermi surfaces in the boundary Green's function. And an important point is that there are no oscillatory regions visible. Since the oscillatory region denoted the instability of this system, it appears that this system is stable. The third thing, third, is that the value of Kf of each of these, each Kf is much, much less than mu, which is rather curious. But in a moment, it will come out right. And the fourth item is that all these poles have exponential widths, which roughly behave as e to the minus k over omega kz to omega. And this was already predicted by Faulkner and Polchinski some time ago.
Shouldn't the Kf be like Q effective times mu?
Excuse me?
I mean, the chemical potential per particle. I mean, is that why it's so small?
K effective is order.
No. Q effective times mu, isn't that the chemical potential per particle?
Maybe. Chemical potential per particle. There's only one fermion in the ADS. I'm not sure I understand.
Well, but it couples to the gauge field. It's Q times mu.
Yeah. Well, it couples with. Sorry, you're right. This is A.
So that's how intuitively I would say maybe Kf should be of the order times Q effective times mu. So that would be much smaller than mu.
No, actually, this follows from requiring that you have this condition on mu. This is the profile. A better way to put it is this is A0. Okay. A0 has a profile along Z. And you simply want that A0 doesn't vary too much. Because if A0 doesn't vary too much, then I may think of A0 as simply mu and compute the fluid properties of the Fermi. Of the Fermi system as a local mu approximation. Okay? So, I'm not going to go in.
Can I ask you?
Yeah.
So, the long oscillatory region for fermions, that was unstable or stable to the leading order in N? I thought.
The long oscillatory region.
Was stable, right? It didn't cause any particles to upper half length.
Well, there's no particle excitation associated with it, right? There's no pole in this oscillatory region, but it's the threshold for particle production if you would do a Schwinger pair type approximation.
And I thought, well, maybe I'm wrong, but
No, there are poles, right, in the, if you're in the density region, there are poles, but they're all in the lower half plane.
Right.
Of the Green's function. They're just, they're not really
exponentially sort of located.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there are poles, but they, yeah, it's sort of, like you said, I don't think there's any stability in leading order again, but.
For bosons, there are.
For bosons, there is.
Yeah, but for fermions, I don't think, at least, you know.
Yeah.
From those papers.
Okay. So for the point is simply that the poles never hit the omega, the real axis.
Yes, that's
yeah.
Fermions.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm only talking about real poles here, not how they sit in the imaginary plane.
I mean, it really just those poles are just, you have a line drawn up there to this K naught. So the poles are just the way to note that line, basically.
Yeah. Actually, so as you yourself showed. So what if I would draw a similar plot now for an electron star? I would like to do it here, so let me. So for the electron star, I can draw now a similar plot of what happens of these poles as a function of k, omega. This is omega is 0. Now, there are very many finitely spaced poles. There may be some few here. This distance actually is roughly proportional to 1 over q effective. When q effective goes to 0, right, they become really infinitely small spaced. And if I would try to draw now this following diagram, wait, let me first, sorry, correction, let me go back. So all these poles, again, have a width, but the width is now much narrower. Right, it's exponentially suppressed. However, if I would try to now draw this diagram, which I had earlier, then I would find something different. Because the object that I should write naturally here is now this Q effective. But this Q effective in this approximation really, since this goes as lambda over kappa to the 1/2, you're really sitting here. Right? The electron star is probing the system over here, where you have many, many of these Fermi surfaces. So now I may perhaps go back to John's question, right? So naturally, you would also assume that there is some nice solution here. However, it will not be an object that has a fluid approximation. If you want to have only one Fermi surface, you would like to find a system whose mu, roughly speaking, gets you here and not all the way up here. Okay.
So,
yeah.
May I ask a silly question? So, what's the physical picture? Suppose we don't have gravity. You are just, suppose ATS is like box and you are filling up the fermion levels in that box. So, in a simple picture like that?
Yeah, exactly. So, you can think of ATS as a box and you're populating.
You're filling the fermion levels in the box.
Yeah.
It's not more complicated than that, right?
No.
Okay.
Okay. So, let me say one more.
Yes. I have a question. So, is the discrepancy resolved yet, or is it still there?
No. At this moment, this discrepancy is not yet resolved. What do you want to have one Fermi surface or not?
Your desire versus what is actually happening.
So the electron star clearly makes sense from the gravitational perspective. It was, you know, the Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkoff equations that are based on this come from astrophysics. And but when you find, so gravitationally, the sensible solution indeed tells you that you don't populate one normalizable wave function, but a very, very large amount.
All the modes are there in gravitation.
Yeah. However, despite the fact that you populate these many, many, many gravitation modes, something beautiful happens, and this was a work of Nabil and Sean independently with collaborators, is that they can show that the total charge in the system is the sum over all the various kfs of each of these Fermi surfaces. So the Luttinger's theorem seems to hold. So the gravity, the CFT dual of the electron star, it does obey the Luttinger theorem. It appears to be stable. That's good. But there are other properties are still not as you would want them to be. In fact, there was a recent paper by the group at Norita that, amongst others, these electron stars don't have Friedel oscillations in the system. Sean has shown that the Kosovitz-Lipschitz oscillations don't really agree with what you naively expect based on the Luttinger count. And the widths, in particular, that's probably the most obvious, the widths are exponential and not quadratic in omega squared in these systems. So, I don't think anybody has computed it, but it seems to be okay. I would agree that it's the most logical answer, but I'm not sure it's immediately obvious. Okay, but let me now go to the other local approximation, or to the more CFT perspective. So, remember that the ES, right, had to fix, or had to take a limit, Q effective, much, much less than lambda. So there is a natural extension of this action that I wrote down earlier. If you include some dilatonic correction, where you would now have and if I give some profile to this dilaton, I would have an effective change of my gravitational interaction strength as I go into the interior, or as I go down my normalization group flow. Right? What I'm just doing here is I'm encoding the intuition that if I look at the free energy, which goes roughly as lambda squared over kappa squared, that this now goes as lambda squared over kappa squared times e to the minus pi. So as I run down the RG flow, I can choose a profile for phi such that the free energy decreases, right? And if I'm really interested in the long wavelength objects of the system, then this seems to be a natural extension of all the things that we've done before. And this seems very nice because, as we know now from this study, that as you change QF, as you make it lower, actually the number of Fermi surfaces in your system decrease. So this is just saying that the number of degrees of freedom in infrared are much, much less than the number of degrees of freedom in UV. Now you can combine this insight, or these findings in the electron star, that there are all these other properties that do not agree with your regular Fermi liquid intuition, and there are some deep insights, which in view of time I'm not going to say, that these other properties, they fail to be Fermi liquid-like due to extra IR, which we just treated.
That might be what you want to model.
Okay. That's not why we're going here, but that may be what you want to model in real experiment. And that I agree with that. And so here, this is a way how you can get rid of all these extra degrees of freedom. And then the simplest way to do this is that if you choose phi is equal to minus log theta function of some. Right? In this case, you have a hard wall ABS configuration.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
If you're not solving the equation of motion, what does free energy mean?
So ideally, you would like to have, for phi, a dynamical equation of motion. But in the ADS QCD world, there's a body of literature where the first approximation, people just put in some profile for phi, ignore the fact that it's really should be a dynamical field. And the point is that you may question this, and that is completely your right, but effectively you get a lot of nice features out of these systems, despite the fact that you're making this, it's not even an approximation, it's a truncation of your theory in some very brute way. Okay? But you do get lots of nice, in QCD, ADS QCD models, you get lots of features of QCD out of these models. And the only thing you put in then is the confinement compared to the pure ADS.
Actually, so if you just want a hard wall, why do you care about the part to begin with? Why can't you just assume it's there, right?
Okay, so I'm putting in phi, right, to link it to this flow, to this changing of kappa over lambda. And as I change kappa over lambda, the number of these guys go down. So you can actually, using a WKB approximation, you can count the number of these Fermi surfaces. And I have it written down here. It's roughly 10k on the lambda. Right? So you can actually count how many you have. Okay.
Is that with phi or without phi? 10k.
This is the electron star. This is without phi.
Okay.
So now I'm going to include phi, but okay. But I want to be a little bit more careful of how to treat this Fermi system. I no longer want to do a fluid approximation. So.
Does phi couple with fermions or no?
Does phi couple to the fermions?
Yes.
In these hard wall models, no, right? That's very easy because it just truncates the system.
It's in front of the hole, actually.
Yep. So in principle, yes. But for a hard wall model, it doesn't do anything. Yeah, in principle, what you have to do, I completely agree, you have to write psi b/phi plus complex conjugate here. That tells you that in the Dirac equation, there will be a component d phi. In these hard wall models, that all sits at the boundary, so it's just encoded in the boundary conditions for psi. You don't have to worry about it. If you go to a profile for phi, you do have to worry about it.
So actually, let me jump ahead. So would a
sophomore
model work?
Would a sophomore model work? So this is what I
have.
So if I had another week, I would report to you on the sophomore model. I'm not going to do that. But I'm going to tell you some features which I think you can already see what's going on. Okay, so the other thing we're going to do, so remember, the one thing was this hard wall model. And the second thing is we're going to go beyond the fluid approximation. So to do that, right? What you really have to do is you have to find a normalizable solution for the Dirac equation given some value for A0. Okay? So remember that chi plus was A C plus plus B. So these are solutions for which A, by construction, is 0. Okay, that's one of the boundary conditions of the solution. And two, you sum over all normalizable states. Subject, right? Not all normalizable states, but to some restriction, right? Which I will explain to obtain, right, the induced density. In other words, you follow your textbook Fermi system approach. Once you have a set of normalizable solutions, you can compute the charge density that is associated with by summing over all modes that are less than the chemical potential. This is a theta function of the wave function. Okay? Then, three, you can compute the induced potential. Just from dz is minus j, no. And then you iterate until it converges. Okay? Are there some questions in when you do this? Let me try to address them by words, but I'm happy to explain in more detail. One is to remember that this is a Fermi system, and we argued that there's some non-local. You have to worry about the non-locality in this system. So what happens to the non-locality when you address this? Well, the first is that when I sum over d2k, I'm clearly going to erase any non-locality in the k direction just because I'm smearing. Okay? It just means that whatever solution I have here, right, it will have some profile. It will depend on if I take two fermions, right, or three fermions, or five fermions. Yeah. So if I just put many single particle wave functions together, there's some relative distance dependence between these and all these guys. If I take a fermion with momentum k1 in one direction, and I add to it a fermion with a momentum in k2 direction, and I would Fourier transform this, I'm going to have some very complicated profile in x. That's all. The reason why I'm not going to have a complicated profile in x is because I'm actually summing over whole circles of k1.
You just explained how to manage the rotation in space.
Yeah. Okay. And translation. Yeah. Okay. Okay. And the tricky part in all this is that you also actually have to worry that the equations of motion that you satisfy is a consistent truncation of the full set of equations of motion. So it turns out that one you have to then also worry about is C0 squared AZ. Component JZ. But it turns out that if you this JZ is precisely proportional to the Wronskian in your system, and if you take exactly one normalizable wave function, its Wronskian is 0. So you don't source actually AZ in this system, even though you naively would expect you do.
So this J naught is the bulk quantity, right?
Yes.
What is its boundary interpretation?
Its boundary interpretation? Ah, I will get to that in a second. Let me get to that in a second. Okay? All right, so when you do this, I'm running a little bit out of time, but you end up finding the following system.
I guess I just want to check something, because you mentioned the word smearing, but you didn't write anything down. So there are many K wave modes, or they're not? There are many different momenta that there's a solid over? Because in principle, there are many modes in the bulk that are filled. For each firm, given one Fermi surface, there are many momentum modes that are filled, not just one. Negative energy, because you have to
sum. I think I'm going to exactly answer your question with what I'm going to draw. So let me draw it first, and then you ask the question. So if you do this, what you find is that when you solve for these normalizable wave functions, and you look at omega as a function of k, what you find the first is that the hard wall presence actually has shifted your poles. They're now not exactly at omega 0, right? But even more complicated, what also they have done for you is they have killed all the exponential widths. There's the exponential width you can think of as tunneling to the horizon, right? This horizon has now disappeared. There's no tunneling amplitude anymore. So what it has done is each one of these is no longer a width, but they are continuous features that have appeared. Roughly speaking, we had in the electron star, just to be explicitly, you had the following Green's function. Right? There was an exact pole at the location where gamma was 0. And outside of the pole, you had a small width. And now this width has disappeared. So now I don't have a pole, but I have a whole continuum where the Green's function blows up. And that's what you see.
You just mean as a dispersion relation for the pole?
Well, the point is that these are all, OK, in terms of the Green's function language, let me not say it. Let me say it in terms of normalizable wave functions in ADS. OK? Yeah, so normally, you would interpret this as the location where gamma is 0. That's the pole. And everything else is the dispersion of this pole away from the location where the Green's function blows up. But now you have a system where you have exactly this.
I think it's not exotic, but I mean, it's like...
No. But what I want to point out to you is the relation sort of in starting from ADS Rice-Nordstrom, where all these guys come from. I will tell you in a second why this is also...
Do you have a black hole anymore, or black hole is gone?
Black hole is gone. So now I can answer your question. You have to sum over all these negative energy states, right? And whereas before, there was not actually physically sort of a infinitely stable state. It was part of the dispersion of your original state. So this is what you're...
There's still spherical weight
there.
Yeah.
I agree. But if the black hole is gone, why do we expect a gamma that comes from this?
Why don't you expect?
If the black hole is gone, then why there will be width? It's natural to expect that the width is 0, right?
Yeah. That I'm not commenting on that. That's natural. Okay? All right? So this is what happens in Sabir's story. And let me conclude with, because I'm running out of time, let me conclude now with connecting this back to an earlier statement, also a question by John, is what happens if you just put a small amount of chemical potential in the system such that you excite exactly one, what looks like one fermion in the bulk. Now, I'm not going to present it this way, but what I'm going to do is, I have here a set of equations that I have solved this way, but what I can also do is rather than find all normalizable solutions and then sum over all normalized states in a very convoluted way, what I can also do is sum formally over all states, and compute some density j mu. Okay. And then insist that in J only normalizable wave functions contribute.
What is it saying?
There's a constraint. Because I'm doing this formally. I'm just writing out this object J mu. There's some constraint here. Okay? The point is, this word, I'm now going to fill in what this constraint is by insisting that J mu only sums over normalizable wave functions. That's exactly what you do here with an E is less than zero. Okay? The point is that all normalizable wave functions I know are those whose chi plus starts at B is Z alpha minus. So I can immediately do this by just requiring that J mu starts as Z to the alpha 2, alpha minus. Okay? And then this density J mu obeys some induced equations of motion to just follow from the applying the Dirac equation on J mu.
With a delta function on the right hand side?
A delta function on the right hand side? I don't know what you mean. No,
I didn't. Same one you had in the earlier paper or a different one?
This, I just applied the Dirac equation on this. The Dirac equation says d chi is 0. Okay. So there's one subtlety. There's one subtlety which I think you're referring to, which I will address. When you do this, you just apply the Dirac operator on this object. You find the following set of equations. There's a plus and a minus component. And b squared a zero is minus j plus k zero.
Your statement is that there is a reformulation of the prescription on this board?
Yeah.
It's the same.
Yeah. It's just that what you do is instead of first finding the normalizable solutions and then squaring them to find j, you write the formal expression for the square of j without filling in. And just the point is that you can restrict to the normalizable solutions by just restricting j to have the certain boundary fall off behavior.
But you still have to do some iteration?
No, because then I can solve these equations in. So there's one technical issue, okay? And I don't have a formal proof for this, but I have an indirect proof for it. Is in J, to get precisely the J0, I do have to sum also over negative energy modes, okay? So how does that fall out?
J0 is like a Green's function, right?
Yes, exactly.
That's why there should be a delta function on it.
Yeah. Right? So let me go there. So how do I know that this object correctly captures this theta function? So as most of you know, if I want to compute the Green's function, this is, in terms of these coefficients, this is d over a. At the boundary Green's function evaluated at z0. And I can construct an object psi as a function of z, which is dz over a z. And I can immediately, from the Dirac equation, write a flow equation for psi that immediately calculates g. I don't have to compute d and a independently. I can also write a new object, let me call it j, which is the following. It is d dagger z divided by d dagger z naught times d over z divided by a over z
naught.
Z naught is the value at the boundary where you compute the Green's function. Z is evaluated at z naught. Okay. And I can now write a flow equation for this system. As you see, it just computes the Green's function. Right? At z naught, this is equal to this. Because at z naught, this is d dagger falls out. And when I look at what this system is of equations for this object, it's precisely this system.
There's different boundary conditions.
Excuse me?
There's different boundary conditions.
If I want the Green's function, I have different boundary conditions, right? I need to have A. So here there is an issue, and now it gets really complicated. Okay. I want the normalizable solutions of this system. All right. The normalizable solutions are where A is 0. So this extension does not exist when A is 0. But this equation of motion, I can completely solve for A is 0 in this boundary behavior. And then I refer back to the earlier theorem of the Green's function, that the Migdal's theorem, that if I look at d dagger norm, d norm, that this is precisely equal to nf. So this is a flow equation for nf directly in the volume. This went too fast, I see. Okay. So I went too fast. So I have this system of equations. So the system of equations, right? The flow equation for the Green's function, I can write two sets, either this set or the one that many of you are familiar with in terms of this guy, psi. To compute the Green's function, I need just some boundary conditions in the interior, depending on what Green's function I wish to compute. I want infalling boundary conditions for the retarded Green's function, etc. All those solutions, except for very special ones, have leading behavior at the boundary. Right? Now I'm going to take the same system of equations that I know computes my Green's function, and now I'm going to change the boundary conditions. I'm going to insist that the boundary falloff does not contain a leading component. Okay. And then I'm going to. So this is for j goes as z to the 2 alpha plus, and the claim is that for j and z naught goes as z to the 2 alpha minus, then the object that j computes is precisely d norm, dagger d norm, which we saw earlier. This is precisely the pole strength in the spectral function, right? And this object, therefore, is related to the discontinuity in NF as a function of k. So the claim is that what these flow equations compute is precisely whether there is a discontinuity in NF in your system or not. And the advantage of these equations over the equations that Subir wrote down is clearly that this is much simpler, right? You can just stick it in. And so you can show, indeed, at finite temperature that this system has some transition.
Before you go to finite temperature, do you get the same, now that Subir has done the calculation, we know what the answer is, do you get the same answer?
Okay, so this is part of what I had hoped to show by the end of this week, but I'm quite convinced that we will get the same answer. So Beer has two things. He also has hard wall boundary conditions. Right, so that was what I was going to finish with. So there's one more of these purple graphs. So this object, not in a hard wall, but in a normal ADS interior, we call the Dirac air background, right? And so what you have there is you have again, poles, but the poles are now at omega zero. Right? This splitting, this shift of the poles is controlled by the infrared boundary condition. And the only thing is that if you want to make these equations consistent in terms of ignoring gravitational back reaction, what you actually have to do is realize that this is the system where Q over Q is basically 1. The microscopic charge of this object is basically the same as the total charge in the system. So the number of these guys that you have is very few. It's 1 or 2. Okay. So it has, whereas in the electron star, this was very small. Here, this object is much larger, right? So this is order 1 in the system. And the widths are relatively narrow in the system. And we only have a numerical result for the widths. We don't have an analytic expression for the widths yet. Okay, so this is where I was going to end with these four diagrams. And as you see, we started with something that didn't look at all like a Fermi liquid. And as we progressed, we slowly got to some object which more and more looks like a Fermi liquid. And these two are the ones that come closest. And as you see, in fact, the defining equations of both these systems are basically the same, except the boundary conditions are different. So that's what I where I wanted to conclude. I have some phase diagrams, but to really make it appetizing. But let me save them for another time. If people want to, I can still draw them over the next 10 minutes. Yeah.
So I'm just trying to understand those set of equations. So should I think of it as some density functional like formalism? Or
So in philosophically, yes. I don't know the exact connection, but it should be related to some density functional type theory. The normal picture that I think of is that you're doing some, you're basically treating this fermion as if it were a boson, right? So that because you're just solving its wave function, and you're saying that's basically an expectation value-like object. For many Fermi systems, you can't do that. But if you have a single fermion, you can. So you can think of this as a single fermion approximation to some stuff you have in a bulk. You're only interested in what happens far away. That should also be captured by the system, if you consider this from the gravity side.
So it should break down if you fill it past the second band?
My guess, indeed, is that this should break down when you fill it, when you go past the second band. That is my, I don't know for sure, but that would be my guess. Or at least at some higher Q. Yeah. Yes, I would agree with that. Then this detailed construction will work, but this order switch will break down. Yeah.
So how do you fix the vacuum? Because the dispersion relation has branches that go upwards and branches that go downwards, the dispersion relation of the single particle function in the bulk. And you don't in this calculation you don't consider the contribution to the charge of the downward.
Yeah.
and how do you fix that the choice in your prescription?
I don't.
Okay.
Right. The idea is that this simply should be encoded in the fact that you're already computing this discontinuity in F already, which in the absence of anything is just zero.
So in this plot, the x-axis is still is k.
X-axis is still k. Yes.
So there's no dispersion. It's just.
I haven't drawn the dispersion. There is dispersion.
Oh, there's dispersion.
Yeah. It's just like the electron star. It's just much narrower than in the Reichen-Nordström. I just don't have an analytic.
So the difference between these two plots is just the spacing between the Fermi levels.
So one thing that is actually very important. So in Sabir's paper, he chooses a value of mu that precisely corresponds to having exactly one that you have one interception with one of these branches. So that's basically the same story as taking this limit in the system, because that's when this system of equations decouples from the gravitational back reaction. Yes.
And for what sum that j and u,
yeah.
Right? So if I take the zeroth component, right, can I think of its normalizable mode and non-normalizable mode as corresponding to particle number to density and chemical potential somehow, boundary chemical potential? So I guess what is so the coefficient of J naught,
yes,
asymptotic thing, that corresponds to what? That corresponds to particle number or the number of Fermi surfaces in the round?
No, so J naught itself, for generic boundary conditions, just computes for you the Green's function. Okay? Except if you insist that the boundary conditions are subleading, then you have to worry. Okay? But that's the usual, that is exactly the same.
Basically, you have like.
I think the short answer is it's a double trace operator, right? So it's trace psi diagonal, trace psi, and
yeah.
it's that number density is what the normalizable mode will calculate at zero frequency.
Yeah.
But if I insist on or not getting a non normalizable mode, is there a meaning to the non normalizable mode? I mean,
source. Yeah.
It's
the source.
Is the chemical potential here?
No, it's an exterior source for your
robot operator.
In this case, it's you're computing the response of the density operator to a single fermion source.
I think it's a good place to stop, so let's thank you for having it.